Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Once upon a time, there was a school for spiritual students. And this school for spiritual students was a school for more advanced students. And it was situated, if you will, at the end of a long valley that emptied into a plain that sat at the foot of a great mountain. And this school for higher education, this school for fearless hearts. It was a school for fearless hearts. It was a school for men and women who were tired of fighting because of the fear of losing what they always feared losing. It was a school for those who wished to have a fearless heart, who wanted the freedom of a fearless heart. And because it was a difficult school, and I won't kid you about it, it isn't, by the way, that what it takes is difficult, but what a person must give from themselves, give up, in order to understand what the school offers, that's what's difficult. Because everybody wants, well, everybody figures, you're, how many of you are great generals? Generalesses. I'm a great general. Ask me. I have plans. I've figured it out. I know what went wrong. I know what to do. I'm a great general. Oh, yeah, you're a great general. General nothing. In this school, where we pick up in the story, the teacher is sitting in front of a group of half a dozen students. And he says to them, at this point in your spiritual development, it is now time for those of you who wish to graduate. You have understood enough. You've been listening long enough. You've got the facts. Now it's time to turn the facts into fearlessness. And if you don't turn the facts into fearlessness, you're just wasting your time. It's time for you to take the final test, the initiation that leads to a life in truth and the fearlessness it brings with it. And they said, well, all right, pretty good. What's the test? No problem. Bring it on, they chanted through the room. And the teacher brought out a beautiful banner. You know what a banner is, don't you? A pole, a flag, kind of a flag. That banner, I don't know why. What's the difference between a banner and a flag? Size? Doesn't matter. Brought out a beautiful banner. And he said to the students as he showed it, this, he said, is the banner of truth. And they looked at it, and when they looked at it, they could see that there was some inscription on this banner of truth, but it was written in a language that no one there knew. Some thought to themselves they recognized it as being Sanskrit. Some said, no, it's ancient this or it's ancient that. But the teacher said, the way in which, and the only way in which you will ever understand the nature of a fearless heart and the truth that brings it to you, is you must learn, you must transcribe what is written on this flag. That is the only way. Now, I must put into the talk at this point, because you might have thoughts that run counter to this, so I need to put it in. There does come a point in a person's life, in a sincere spiritual student's life, when first and foremost they find a source of truth. And then secondly, in finding that source of truth, they come to recognize that it cannot lie to them. And therefore, that person who has found that source of truth that knows it cannot lie to them knows that when that source of truth says something like, the only way to get past this point is that you must find out for yourself what is written on this banner of truth, such a student knows that that's it, that there's no point in running around and looking for some flag with something easier on it to understand, or some other school that doesn't talk about whatever it is that the teacher's talking about, because the truth is the truth. And so the teacher said, you may each have a small copy of this, and he brought out little tiny banners, to work with. But when you're ready, you may come to me and show me what you have done. You may tell me what you think the banner says. And so each one took their little banner of truth. Now, what does that mean? In other words, a reflection of, a shadow of that banner. And some went and they went to the libraries and they did their research on this language, and some didn't bother to do research at all. They intuited it. I knew. They put their hands on it. Some ran crystals over it. Some put it under their pillow and thought they would wake up knowing the answer. Some went and sat in deep silence on a snow-covered mountain till nothing happened. But eventually they all came back, and the teacher said, "All right, which of you has transcribed this statement on the flag so that you can for yourself finally have a fearless heart?" And a couple got up and said fairly stupid things. And by stupid things, I mean that they said what they thought would be the closest approximation to it, you know. And they weren't bad things, meaning what they said was nice and right, you know. There's only one God, love God with all your heart, you know, long live the light. You know, they each took a shot, in other words, at what the flag really said. But none of them got it right. And the teacher said, "Well, now what do we do?" And one of the students said, "What do we do?" And this teacher said, "Do you want to know? Do you want to know the only way you'll ever transcribe this, what's on this flag with this banner?" And a couple of them began to suspect that this might be a little more in depth than what they were thinking about. And they, yeah. Because they were from Sweden, Norway, Minneapolis. And he said, "Those of you who want to know, and only one of you at a time may do so, you must take this banner of truth, and you must take it from this school. You must walk out down into that valley, and through the valley of terror, and through that plain where at the foot of that mountain sits all of the stormtroopers of terror. And you must go and plant this banner on top of that hill that those stormtroopers and their terrors are protecting us." And the students looked at the teacher and said, "Well, could you go over that one more time?" "Yes," he said, "I'm happy to. You must take this banner of truth, and you must hold it high, and you must walk through the valley and across that plain, right up to the foot of that mountain that is held by the stormtroopers of terror. And you must climb that mountain holding the banner, and you must plant that banner on top of that mountain. And if you do, you will learn and know what is written on the banner." Who's first? And of course, in their mind's eye, and I'll bring this into you more distinctly in a moment, in their mind's eye, they were thinking to themselves, you know, well, we've heard about that valley, and we know about that plain, and we've seen the cannons, we know the machine gun nests, we know the mortars that are set up on that mountain. There's no one that can cross that plain. That's why we're in school, by the way. That's why we stay here. We rarely go out. Now, what does that mean? The student knew that what the teacher was saying, this is relative to now your life, is that if you want to understand what's written on this banner of truth, you're going to have to walk through the field of hell. You're going to have to face all of the darkness inside of yourself. You're going to have to understand it by walking into it, not by thinking about it, not by giving lectures, not by telling yourself how great you are, but by engaging the enemy. That is how you will learn what is written on this flag. So one of the students said, "I'll do it." said, okay, and the teacher handed him the banner of truth. The student barely got out the front door of the school when over under the mountain, gosh, miles away, vroom, vroom, and incoming, you know, and the student could hear the shells coming, and he dived onto the ground and brushed and scraped his nose and walked back and started crying because he hurt himself. Teacher said, well, is that it? He said, I'm not going out there. I mean, did you see the puffs from the mountain where the blasts were coming? Did you hear the sound of those explosions? Only an idiot would do that. This can't be right. And he left the school. Teacher looked at the rest. Who's next? He asked again, who's next? Student raised her hand. I'll do it, she said. Took the banner, walked out, got about a half a mile out there into the valley, and just was getting to the flat part of the plain when all of a sudden, rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat, mortar shell, boom, boom, and dove into the dirt. Laid there for 6 years. Finally came back covered in dirt, bruised from jumping on the rocks. Too bad I have to get going with the story. Finally, one student said, I'll try. And I'll tell you why the student who was about to succeed said, I'll try. Because he knew that the truth could not ask him to do something that the truth wouldn't see him through. He knew it.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
He knew it. He wasn't confident. He wasn't courageous. He just knew that the truth wouldn't ask him to do something it wouldn't see him through. So he said to the teacher, okay, let me out. Took the banner, walked out, got through the valley onto the plain. Boom, cannon, boom, mortars, machine guns, bombs blasting everywhere. And the minute that everything started exploding around him, he dove into the dirt just like everybody else. And he laid there covering his eyes, trying to hide from himself all the fearful noises and everything. And then he was sure, because I don't know if you were, he was sure after another bomb blast went off and he felt the pressure of it, boom, and he thought, oh my God, I'm dead. I've been wounded. And he ran back to the school. And then he walked back in. Teacher said, why are you back? He said, well, I've been wounded. Teacher said, let me see your wound. Student opens his coat and says, look. Teacher says, at what? Student looks down. There's no wound there. Teacher says, where's the wound? Student says, it was there. Well, I don't see it, teacher says. Student says, I don't either, but it still hurts a little bit. Well, what are you going to do? And he thought to himself, now, I thought I got hit. I thought I was wounded, meaning I thought that this darkness, this anger, this fear, this worry, I thought it had done something terrible to me. I was sure. And that's why I didn't want to go forward. But now I can see that really nothing happened. And that whatever it is that I think happened has happened only in my mind. That's where the wound is. That's where the feeling of it remains. But if I look at myself, the fact is there's no damage to myself. Nothing bad has happened to me. All right, I'm going back, he said. Takes the banner, goes out, charges across the field, gets a little bit further. In come the cannon shells. I can't do any more sound effects. Machine guns, boom, boom, boom. And he takes another hit. He's sure, oh my God, this time he's lying there. He's thinking, oh, Heavenly Father, you know, take me, whatever it is. I'm dead. It's over with. And he's laying there. And while he's laying there, because of what happened the time before, he realizes, you know, and by the way, please understand this, I think I'm going to look to see whether I was hit or not. You never confirm for yourself that what happened to you, meaning that you never look to see whether or not this thing that you've been carrying around for 15 years or 15 minutes has actually produced something real. All you accept is the sensation inside of yourself as being the fact of it. And he did a very courageous thing. And this is really runs deep, if you can see it. Ever hurt yourself and been afraid to see it? I mean, physically hurt yourself and didn't want to see what it was that happened to you? I've done that so many times I can't tell you, because I've been wounded so many times. You know, you don't want to look because you know it's going to be terrible, and it never is quite as bad as you think. Although once in a while it can be. But this is a different story. And he looks, and sure enough, where he thought there was a wound, there was no wound. And so he picks himself up a little bit and he looks out and he picks his head up. Things flying by him, battle boom. And he picks up the banner and he starts to walk up the hill. And I'm telling you, this is exactly what happens, because I have to make it fast now. All that happens is the shells and the machine gun bursts and the bomb blasts go off all around him. And yes, some knock him down, but he does not get hurt. And he walks right through those stormtroopers, right through the resistance, the fear, the negative states, right through it, and plants the flag on top of the hill. And when he's standing there planting it, he knows exactly now what the flag always said. It appeared in his mind, because now his mind and heart had become one and the same thing with what the banner of truth had always had on it. And he walked back to the school, and he walked in, and the teacher knew that he had accomplished the task. And he asked the student, he said, would you like to tell the other students what the flag says, even though what you know will not be their experience? And the student said, yes, I will. I will transcribe now for you what was written on the banner of truth. There is no power greater than truth, and nothing in the universe can hinder or hurt that soul who is willing to prove this truth to himself. That what was written on the flag. Now, in case you don't understand the correlation between his realization of that truth through battle and the fact of the fearless heart that such knowledge conveys to the individual who goes through that conflict, is that when a person understands that his or her own negativity has no power apart from the power that they give it in their fear of it, then that person is forever free and fearless. It is your negative states that tell you what you have to have in order to be free. Negative states do not know what freedom is. They know how to enslave you with the images that seem to be the pathway to that promise. The young man who went across the battlefield learned that all that those negative states can do, all those machine guns and bombs and mortars, that all that any of that can do is just make noise and produce pressure. That is all it can do. And that no one is wounded by noise or pressure, but that the wounds always come from diving into the dirt in order to escape the wounds feared coming. That is the only way the spiritual student who understands the truth is hurt, by trying to avoid being hurt. Period. Now, to understand such a nature requires that an individual do what virtually no one wants to do. And to explain it in simpler terms, if you will, and make give us an exercise out of it, take a deep breath and we'll go back to the top of the talk. Do you understand that when you get negative, whatever that may be, frightened, anxious, worried, that when you get negative, you do what the enemy tells you to do? Can't you see that? When you get anxious, now the anxiety represents the bomb blast. Here comes the bomb blast. Here comes that anxiety. Here comes that worry. It's incoming. And the minute that it comes, the minute that you hear that, phew, and you see the shell on its way, at that instant, you cease to exist as a person who can do anything other than obey the corresponding part of you that believes that the pain is real. That's all there is. The fear of the event produces the self who is pained by, not the event itself, but by their fear of it. So here's a person in their whole life, although they don't see it, is they're always doing exactly what the enemy wants them to do, never finding out that the enemy has only in its power that which can convince the person of something real, but cannot produce the reality itself. You don't know what it's like to be absolutely sure, because of the battleground you're on and everything that's going on, you don't know what it's like to call the bluff of negative states. Because you do what they tell you to do, which is the same as saying, that you become the embodiment of that state. And when you are the embodiment of a negative state, you have all the arms and legs, fingers and toes, eyes and ears, everything that that state needs to convince you that that's all there is. Wrap yourself in the banner of truth. Wrap yourself in the banner of truth. And to wrap yourself in the banner of truth is not an ideal. If you make it an ideal, you make it a horror. You make it an ideal, you're no different than the psychopathic terrorists, no matter where they are on this planet, who walk around in the name of truth, destroying anyone and everything that they feel they must battle with in order to keep their life intact. To wrap yourself in the banner of truth means that wherever you are, you have understood and agreed to act upon how, no matter how small the understanding is, that the light of truth and its goodness is greater than anything else. That nothing is greater than God, that nothing is brighter than His light, that nothing is truer than the intelligence that created the universe for the purpose of perfecting things in it. You may choose the words you want, but you from yourself understand that you have the capacity to choose in favor of living in that and with that, to let your understanding of the truth be your guide instead of letting yourself being guided by that which tells you you're in a battle that you can't win. And that takes a certain amount of understanding in which a person refuses for the rest of their life, God willing, to allow a negative thought or feeling, a fear, a worry, a doubt. I don't care what the state is. You no longer address yourself by it. You choose to sustain what you must in the presence of that negative state, because your guide, your light, your truth is the truth. And only when you do that can you understand the powerlessness of what you presently have attributed total power to. That's the only way you'll ever understand what it means to have God, to have truth as your guide across this field. Because when He is there, if you've understood what I've said, there are no more battles that He has not already won. And when you know that, you are made fearless. Because you can no longer lose what you once imagined had to be protected. You are now living in a state of light.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
If you had the eyes to see, long before you were capable of recognizing that there is a transcendent reality, long before you would recognize that there is a purity and a presence that cannot be corrupted, long before you would see that, but in tandem with the beginning of seeing the following, then you would have your eyes opened. You would see, when you look at human beings, shell-shocked, battle-worn, field-fatigued beings. That's what you would see. You would look out and you would see that strange, almost invisible twitching that is the precedent to a certain dullness of eyes, a certain lack of energy exuding from the individual, you would see with your own eyes that this planet is populated by people who have been so long in pain and so afraid of it that they have dedicated their lives to building trenches and mansions in trenches so that somehow or other they might find a moment's respite from these never-ending battles. Battle-worn, soul-tired, sick human beings. That is what you would see. Now, the only way you'll ever know, and it's pretty important actually, that the speaker is telling the truth, is if you, first of all, begin to suspect that that's true, not of the person you live with, but of yourself. How hard it is some days just to put a smile on your face. The difficulty of not expressing that fear, that doom, that gloom, of not talking to yourself about when the next shell is going to land next to you and shatter your dreams. So you must first suspect the truth of that before you can begin to see in any way whatsoever whether or not that's true, what I'm saying to you. And the reason it's so hard for us to see such a thing is because a shell-shocked trooper looks at another shell-shocked trooper and doesn't see anything different than himself. We see all around us the evidence of a life lost to madness. Lost to madness. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, why lost to madness? Because it is madness to try to win what you are trying to win in this life. It is madness. Well, sometimes I finish a sentence and then the little editor in my head goes, wait. It is madness to try to win in this life what you are trying to win according to your ideas of winning. It is madness. And where you have the evidence of that madness, you see human beings. Now listen carefully, because this is a difficult concept, but one you must understand. You see human beings who are pitted against one another. Pitted has two meanings, doesn't it? There is the one who looks pitted after a blast goes off next to him. But pitted against one another means set against one another. Set against the conditions that are contrary to you winning the battle that you have said is the battle of the day. And all day long for a human being's life, maybe the whole of it, he or she will find whatever it takes. And this is what I talked about, shell-shocked. You know, when you first enter into this life, you first find yourself out there in the field of endeavor, you're pretty darn sure that you're going to be the one who wins the gold medal. You're going to have all those little ribbons on your chest that indicate you were the one who managed to overcome what none others were able to do. Most of us feel that way. Some of us, right at the beginning, I'm pretty sure nothing good's going to happen. That's because our parents, by and large, lost so many battles that they slowly infused us with that sense of futility about life that said, son, daughter, without saying it, that you needn't really go out and try. Just go find some way to be safe. Just go get what you can, get yours, and let everything go the way it goes. So there's two types, but the fact remains the same, and that is this. That part of being born on this planet is being pushed out into a world in which the idea of a battle with life is never questioned, because that which causes a person to battle with life is validated from the moment the person is born by the actions of everyone around him or her. And the actions that validate the need for battle in life is that everywhere you look, both outside of yourself and within yourself, there is the fear you're going to lose something. And if you could just, if there was a chance you could pull back and see that you, that before you knew what something valuable was, you were told what valuable was and then given the fear you wouldn't get to it. You saw mom and dad struggling to keep up with the Joneses. Was that the expression? You know? You saw a world in a continual sense of strife and struggle, trying to keep things in the appearance of being on top of all else. And there was never an explanation for why that was. It was just what one was and what one did. And it didn't matter at what level of social class you were born in, whether you had the smallest house in a crummy section of the town or you had the best home possible. You saw people who were in a fight to keep what they thought they had. And no one ever came out and just said, you know, what are we fighting for? Instead, we always discussed and looked at the necessity to fight with what we did in order to keep what? And that's what I'm asking you. In order to keep what? Now, I'll spell it out for you. In order to keep you on the battlefield one more day. In order, and this is a little bit convoluted, so you have to wake up and use your mind. In order to somehow evade those vicious forces, social, economic, relationship-wise, to evade those forces that if they manage to overcome me, would take from me my freedom. And if you could look at, and I know it's hard, but take a deep breath. Maybe the oxygen will stimulate your brain enough to be able to see this. Take away your freedom. Take away your freedom. Don't you see that the freedom that you fear losing is a product born of fear? Everything that says a person has to fight with life, go into battles in order to achieve and overcome something, is done so that they can maintain what they say is their level of freedom. And they never question to themselves the idea that if it's freedom I have, why must I go and fight every day for it? These are the questions that one must ask oneself. And one must ask oneself with a certain ruthlessness, because if you examine it, you will see beyond the shadow of a doubt. And we have a story to help exemplify this. See, beyond the shadow of a doubt, day in and day out, there's a battle going on. It may be with somebody next to you in your house. It may be with somebody that cuts you off on the freeway. It may be somebody that says something to you offhand. Maybe something that happens in the world about the economy. Maybe something about your health. But there is a fight going on every day. And when one examines the fight, the idea is that I must fight or I will lose what I have. And I'm asking you to see at this point that what would it hurt you to lose what you have when all you have is day after day a fight?
Love. the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And a fight that never ends. And by the way, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Just so you know that. No, you don't understand what I mean. Human beings, sleeping human beings, live perpetually in a world of opposites. And the only thing that reconciles those opposites, those conflicting forces, the only thing that reconciles those conflicting forces for them is that which they imagine will do the reconciliation that only produces the next battlefield and the next thing to fight with. That is what human beings are presently the embodiment of. They are an incorporation of conflict. And we believe that the battle we fight to get rid of the pain inherent in being the incorporation of conflict, we believe the battle will one day bring an end to that conflict and bring us the freedom inherent in winning the battle as we've imagined it. Never seeing that every battle that we have gone into, and even though, how many of you have won a battle? I know, I've won a few. And let me see hands. Come on, you've won a few battles. And where's your freedom? What you won was the next stage in which you would stand up and have to fight against that which was going to take away the freedom you won. So what did you really win? You see, that's the question. What good is that battle? Now, let's all take a deep breath because we're going to talk about a certain set of ideas that will lead us to a story. How many have you? Three bags full. How many of you have ever said in quieter moments after the battle, have ever said to yourself, you know, I didn't have to do that? Hands, most of you. I didn't have to say that cruel remark that I thought, you know, would win the battle. Because why else, by the way, do you say a cruel remark to another human being? Why else does one say that sarcastic, stabbing comment? Why does one do that? If not to do what? Win a battle. Now, does one think to oneself, uh-oh, I'm in a battle, when someone walks over and says and throws the bomb into your court? You don't think to yourself in that moment, I'm in a battle. You realize something's going on, and before you have any choice in the matter, out comes the barb. Yes or no? The barb. Oh, dear. For those of you listening to this tape, we have someone named Barb in the class. Out comes the barb, and we're all afraid of the barb. And then after the dust of that battle settles, you sit there and you think to yourself, you know, at least I hope you do. I didn't have to say that. It wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a right thing. How many of you, after a moment in which a certain kind of battle has been staged, you see that, you know, I didn't have to fall into that fear. I didn't have to fall into that fear. I didn't have to become anxious. Yes or no? I see we're moving interior a little bit, aren't we? I didn't have to say that cruel comment because the battle was seemingly exterior to myself. But now here comes a condition, here comes a situation with a person that's not present, or with something that I hear about news, or someone says to me about someone said this or the other about me, and all of a sudden I fall into this anxiety. And I'm carried away by my anxiety. I become a captive of my fear. What does it mean to become a captive of my fear? I begin to listen to fear tell me what has happened and what I must do in order to set the battlefield straight and come out on top. Now where is the battle? Is the battle in the world? Someone, you hear some news of some kind, or you hear someone said something, there is the extenuating circumstance, but the fact is the conflict is taking place inside of you between the idea you have about what you stand to lose, if that's true, and what you must do in order to keep things as they are, which is what with you, the winner, so to speak. So I see it. God, I spent, and then you fill in the blank, I spent the whole day in doubt, in the darkness of an anxious feeling, in the grip of a fear. I spent the whole day running over the same scenario by which I hoped I would resolve this battle. Or, for some of you, I spent the whole month, the whole year, I've spent my whole life doing it. Because people do. That's very important for you to understand. A person spend their whole life reliving a battle that they imagine they lost and that they still derive a sense of self from as they try to relive it in order to extract a measure of glory from it. Something to save a little face. If you only knew that the face you were trying to save wasn't your face, which is what we're getting to. And last, in those quieter moments when the dust settles, how many of you ever realized, you know, I didn't have to sell my soul. God help me, I didn't have to sell my soul. What does that mean for those of you that don't understand it? I didn't have to smile in the face of that person who hates truth. I didn't have to laugh with that person who uses bad language and bad sex jokes. I didn't have to pretend to like somebody in order to get something from them. I didn't have to agree with what I knew was disagreeable. I didn't have to do it. And then what happens in those moments where, because a battle presents itself, and then you see that you didn't do the good you want to do, instead you did the evil you don't want to do, to quote St. Paul. What happens in moments like that? Then what happens to you when that happens? Then you say, oh, what a bad person I am. How terrible I am. And part of being terrible, by the way, is that you see that you were in a battle that you got dragged into that you didn't even know you were in. This is the first point. You didn't know you were in a fight. It was just part of that momentary day-to-day activity going on inside of you when conditions can cause you to respond to a moment in ways that afterwards you say, my God, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why did I go there? And to the point of this talk, what we're saying is that in such moments like that, why couldn't I see? Why couldn't I see who and what I was when I was busy defeating myself? Why couldn't I see it while that was taking place? Because what good is it? And I tell you frankly, it isn't. What good is it to look back over something and then hate yourself for it? I'll tell you what the good is in it. The good belongs to that nature that believes hating itself is the same as correcting itself. We don't change ourselves by hating ourselves, by loathing our actions, other than to ensure that the nature that did the self-defeating action is strengthened in us. That's all that happens when we do that. So the question is, and it's an important one, how can I do differently when I'm doing myself in? When I'm about to do myself in, how can I do something else? Isn't that the real question? And then out of it, how many of you ever did something that you knew was against yourself, and then you spent the next day or 42 years figuring out how the next time that a circumstance comes up like that, by God, you're going to be prepared. They'll never get the upper hand on me again, by George. You understand that? I'm never going to be afraid like that again. And what you can't see is that in those moments where you figure out how to protect yourself from something that just punished you on the battlefield, what you're really empowering is a nature that has already set you on the battlefield with a weapon that will prove as insufficient as all the other weapons you have ever given yourself, be they psychological or physical. Why? Who understands? Do you understand that idea? Here I am, and I'm trying to figure out how to protect myself. Trying to figure out how to be stronger than that situation. By doing what? By imagining that which I know to imagine that will come to my rescue in my time of need. But haven't we seen this? And in case we haven't, let me make it so clear you can't not see it. The problem is that at the moment of challenge, the self that steps into the battle without you knowing anything about the nature of that self. And after its actions are done, then you are able to look back in shame or in anger or in fear and say to yourself, who was I and why did I behave like that? So it is not, and this is the pivotal point before the story, it is not a question of learning to do something different. Which is all the mind knows to approach problems with, is better ways to deal with it next time. Read the book, The 7 Effective Habits of Psychopaths. We must learn what it takes to be different before we can hope to do differently. If we do not understand what it takes to be different, we will never do different. Get it in your mind. Because until that's so crystal clear that you give yourself no other pathway, you will always, in the moment of battle, by a process of default, refer back to something that answers the moment for you with what it has to answer with. After it answers, then you'll think about the answer you had. You'll hate yourself or applaud yourself for what you've done. But none of that will change the fact that you will be back on the battlefield in the next 5 minutes, fearing the loss of whatever it is that you thought you either protected or managed to gain for yourself in that fight. So how do we become something different? If it's not by doing. This is the classical, ageless spiritual question, and we're going to have a story to exemplify it. So let's have the story. Take a breath. Here we go.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.